Welcome to season 2 of WeTel Talks. WeTel is a community for developers and WeTel Talks is our live audio stream. This is a recorded episode from the live stream. We invite inspiring techies from all over the world to meet, host talks and discuss the latest in tech. My name is Charlotte Holman and I'm the founder of WeTel. In this episode, we meet Cecilia Borg, who works as a consultant CTO. Her latest mission was at G-Loot, which is one of Sweden's largest e-sport companies. Cecilia's passion is gaming, but also DevOps. She talks about how to make an organization sing with the help of DevOps. Today with us, we have Cecilia Borg, who is a former CTO at G-Loot, but you also work as a consultant CTO. You jump in and you are CTO at different companies. Welcome here, great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, so before this talk, I looked at your CV and you've been to like all the cool places that we have here in Stockholm. You've been to Spotify, Oracle, King, Kry, which is a very cool scale-up. Which one was your favorite job?
No, I learned so much from all of them, and I think having fun with colleagues everywhere, I think that is what's defining fun for me, and doing cool stuff. And I'm honored to be a part of such cool tech scale-ups and startups working from Stockholm. So I've been managing to live here and work internationally and with great colleagues. So I'm grateful for all of them. Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us a bit about your background? How did you become a developer from the beginning?
So I've always had a passion for computer games and video games. So I grew up in the Nintendo generation. I was also part of the Swedish National Championships in Nintendo.
That's so cool.
No, that was a lot of fun growing up. During the mid-90s, we also got a home PC. It was a tax-deducted initiative from the government to place the PCs in everyone's home. And I got the ownership of that and kind of started program and in Pascal and Visual Basic on that one. And I managed that computer. If it broke down, I was the one responsible for fixing it. And I also had an interest in math and physics. And one of my scout friends, she said, well, it's obvious that you should apply for the master's program in computer science. And I didn't know what it was, and I didn't know kind of where, what engineering was, but I looked it up and it fit like a glove. So that's how I began, and then kind of applied and started programming for real there, and just loved it.
Mm. And how did you find your passion for games? You know, I also had a passion when I was a kid, but it was because my dad gave me games.
Yeah. No, so as a kid, I went down with my brother to the toy store where they had the demo machines. And I thought that we could never afford a video game or a computer at home. So I stood there with the other kids and kind of we just loved it. And I think kind of just pushing buttons in elevators like all kids and seeing that things happen when you push them, and then taking the step into you can actually create your own games and you can decide what happens on the computer screen. That was a kind of, that was a revelation for me, and a really sense of powerfulness and creativeness. So games, I think kind of as a kid, it was easy to find the passion for games. And then taking the step into actually creating and not only being a consumer. Mm-hmm. I think getting that stepstoning into it, that was what led me on to the developer profession.
Mm-hmm. And today you're, can I say that you're a consultant CTO at different companies? How did you end up like that. Yeah. And can you tell us a bit more what you do when they hire you as a CTO?
For sure. I've been to multiple companies and I've been through different journeys on the companies where I've been through. And it's not always been easy. It's quite often been painful and full of conflicts, so on. But I've also got a leadership career within the Scout movement, and pairing those kind of the leadership, value-based leadership, with the tech knowledge of automation and everything, I've seen how the friction in organizations and growing organizations often comes from a lack of trust or a lack of technical ability in the systems. So I early on saw that structure and wanted to make a difference and kind of wanted to help and creating a platform to do that. Because when you're a developer, you don't have all the mandate and you're not in the deciding rooms where they decide things. So that's when I kind of started stepping up and said that, okay, if I take on this leadership position, I can create a platform for myself with trust and the mandate to enable my fellow developers. And I can see how we can make this so much easier and better. And so I started off in a startup in Stockholm, which were then acquired by BA Systems and Oracle. And then we acquired Sun Microsystems that held on to, that was the competitor. And during that journey, that was over 12 years, I worked as a developer and as a manager, as a product strategist, and went through mergers, and I could see how leadership and so on, how we can make the exact same product in two different organizations in different ways, and how the one way could be full of conflicts and the other could be. So that led me on to kind of me having knowing that this can be done in a different way. And then taking on other leadership assignments at other companies, I repeatedly saw a pattern of kind of we can make this work better. And that led me on to agile principles of giving the mandate of how things are solved to the team, and also the principles of DevOps, where agile principles and the team are also paired with technology and automation, and seeing how we can produce rock solid products, innovation, and happy employees at the same time. So that led me on to starting my own consultancy, being an interim CTO for organizations during phases of change. Yeah, so I can help them on to finding their own ways forward. So that's why I do this. I stay on assignments for 6 to 9 months or up to a year, and just helping them find the next phase. And sometimes it's chaos or hypergrowth, but kind of finding some sort of structure to the next level.
Mm. Mm. Oh, you can start at WeTal if you want. We really need that.
Cool.
But we are in that phase now. We're going from startup to kind of scale up.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of challenges. What would you say is like the most common challenges that you have faced on the company at the companies?
Often when I come in, they've gone through the same phase as you're describing for WeTal, going from that startup phase to scale up. And then in that organization where you have that small, solid team that where everyone knows each other and everyone knows what they're doing, to more specialized teams with the hope that everything should be more efficient if everyone is left alone and specialized and doing everything that they know. But then suddenly you end up in an organization where you have quality issues with the thing that you push or your product. You have conflicts because people don't trust each other and don't understand what they're doing. And you have managers seeing kind of why aren't we producing features? So coming in there, often where organizations have friction, the people in the organizations are wanting clarity and wanting a clear direction, and everyone is like, but we know what the problem is, why can't we just solve it? So that kind of fussiness, that kind of friction in the organization, and also organizations trying to recruit during the same time, trying to grow, trying to fix these problems at the same time, and not knowing where to start. So that's when I come in, and trying to find the structure and finding kind of what are the pain points we should start with, and asking the people in the organization, asking the managers, and listening to exit interviews for people leaving, talking to the management team, and talking to everyone to find the three first steps to start attacking.
And you said that usually people know the problem and like, why can't we just solve the problem? And like, why is that? Is it that no one wants to take the be in charge of the problem, or what is the? Well, because I've been in these types of organizations where it's like you have 20 developers, but it's like you never go to the next step and like solve the problems. And what do you think is the most common problems?
I think the most common problems is that you try to attack too many things at the same time. It's not uncommon for organizations to have 10 key objectives or 4 OKRs or 3 Northern Stars, and then kind of then that sums up, and no one knows what is the 3 biggest challenges for the organization in order for us to win as an organization and focus on that, because all organizations have their own KPIs, and sometimes they're orthogonal to each other. So starting and just saying that, kind of stop, slow down, find the 3 most important issues to work with and to attack from start. So I have something that I call the Monday test. So if you as a CEO, you know, stop, stand in front of your office Monday morning, greeting everyone, all employees coming in, and asking them, kind of, what are the 3 major objectives for the organization, or the challenges, or the goals for the organization? And just kind of finding that, all employees, can they explain what the 3 most critical challenges are? I think in most organizations, people can't do that. They can't single out.
Always see my own problems.
Your own problems or organizations or kind of the KPIs that you've got, but kind of what are the 3 overarching for the whole organization? And then the follow-up question to that is, how will the work that you do today feed into that goal? Or those goals, or to all 3 of them? And being able to stepstone what you do every day into the 3 overall goals for a company or organization, that's immensely powerful. And then you have the work pride of kind of what I do now and today actually matters to the organization, and I understand why it is. And that it's not kind of just we need to reach 54 instead of 53. It's like, by why is it we do this, and why do we need to do this to survive as an organization?
Yeah, that's very good. And I think because usually also like in developer teams, I was thinking about refactoring also. You were talking earlier, like, when do you refactor all the code and when you start building new features, there's always this like game.
It's a race
against time.
No, that's one of the main challenges that we always stumble into, because before you know what your business is going to do and what actually works, you need to focus on that, and then you collect a lot of technical debt, and then you come to the point where it's really hard to work. So you need to spend some time always kind of cleaning out some technical debt, but you can't spend too much time on that. So I say that you divide your work between, and maybe as a developer, you should spend 80% of your time doing new things in the product and kind of listening to the product owner, and then 20% to actually address technical debt and to build your platform more in a more solid way. But if you do technical debt to 50% or 60%, then you can't find the new things. So there's no, you shouldn't aim at having the most perfect platform or removing all technical debt. You need to kind of find what your customers want to do, because the chances are that if you don't, then your company ceases to exist and it doesn't matter if you have the most perfect platform. So try to find the hot paths. Where is it really annoying to work? Where does it take time and where the developers don't want to innovate? Try to isolate them and try to spend those the 20% of your time fixing those hot paths. Not everything, but kind of the where you actually do. So I think that is the task of the tech leads and the engineering managers, to actually find the problems in the code and translate it into why would it be important. So it's not the primary business target to fix that, but it's the secondary business target to be able to innovate. So I think everyone need, if you say that we want to spend time on removing this technical debt, someone needs to formulate why is it important. So, and then you can translate it into, well, it would remove 20 minutes of developer time every day, or every time we deploy, we will do this much quicker, or kind of 10 minutes quicker, or we will be able to innovate in this way. So you need to find someone who can actually take a step back and quantify what would be, so not kind of write 4 pages of business case why you need to remove the technical debt, but formulate it this way. And if you can't do that, then I challenge that decision to actually remove that technical debt and kind of finding a more urgent part to remove instead, because we can't spend too much time removing technical debt.
Well, some people love that.
Yeah.
And refining. And,
oh, for sure. And you're, if you ask me, I think 15 years ago, we had product managers sitting on another floor or kind of somewhere else in the building, not being part of the team. And there was this friction going on. And the product manager saying that, well, you developers, you only want to build platforms and systems and kind of the generic platform that is perfect. And me as a developer is like, yes, I want to build that kind of, because it looks so pretty. Kind of the engineer in me really want to create that. But we're here to create business for our customers. And then there was this agile wave where they actually moved the product owner into the team or very close to the team, so to get business knowledge into the team. And that was so much needed, because we needed, it's not, we're not here to build the most perfect platform. We're here to deliver value to our clients. So it's, the engineer in me wants to build that perfect platform, but that's not the way we're here. So training the engineers and everyone in the team to see the client that, and the customers, those are the ones we do the job for.
Yeah, completely agree. And you are very passionate about DevOps. And can you first of all describe what is DevOps really? It's a mysterious word.
Yes, and just as agile, I don't, yeah, I think that you're getting as many definitions of agile as there are agilists, and I think the same thing goes for DevOps. So I would describe DevOps as a culture, methodology, principles.
Religion.
Really general, but it's it includes everything that makes the team being able to take responsibility for what they deliver. So if they can develop, test, deploy, maintain, and handle incidents themselves, then they reached the level of DevOps. Mm. But to come to that point, the whole organization needs to have the culture of letting them do this. And they also need the technical support from maybe an infrastructure team to be able to do that. And they need the understanding of quality, maybe from someone who can be a quality coach. Mm-hmm. And they need the product ownership to be able to understand, because they need to, in small iteration, learn if what they just did is making the clients happier, and if they broke something in the product. So they need the business metrics to see that, okay, so clients are actually liking this, and they also need the production metrics to see, did we break anything, or kind of, is this still solid? Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of things. So that's why I'm talking about a culture, because mm-hmm. not all organizations trust their developers or product teams to do all this, and then you need to talk to the C-level team or the leadership suite, and kind of how to, sometimes you have organizational silos that making DevOps impossible. Mm-hmm. So to get to that point, you need that trust, you need to understand, everyone needs to understand why we're doing here, why we're here, and also having the mandate of creating the how themselves.
Mm. Yeah, because I always, when I think DevOps, I think about Vital, of course, and I think we're gonna start automating. Like we're gonna have, we have some tests, mm-hmm. but we should have a person that sits and write tests. We should mm-hmm. have better releases. It's quite mm-hmm. embarrassing how we release these days, but but we don't maybe do it in like the most perfect way right now. Mm-hmm. And use maybe, is it like Jenkins or mm-hmm. something like that yeah. that you use? Mm-hmm. But for us, for example, that we are, it's kind of like me that is the tech product manager and our team in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. We're three people, so we're two full stack developers, one designer, and we're going to take in one more backend developer. And from the beginning, as I told you, that I hacked together the Vital platform, mm-hmm. then the team took it over and they just kept building. What would you recommend for us? Like, when and how should we start with proper DevOps?
So I think...
And what should we do?
Yeah,
what
so
part do we
well,
start
I
with?
Think you're off to a great start. I think the first thing is to just see what does your customers want and what actually works, and making sure that you can release several times a day. And it seems like that's exactly what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then adding quality to that, but making sure that everyone understands quality and write their own tests. Mm-hmm. And if you want to hire someone if you want to hire competence with tests, then it's important that that person can also relay the test quality standards to everyone else.
Mm. But do you think they should write their own test maybe in the beginning?
Well, all the time.
Okay. Yeah. I will tell them today.
Yeah. No, for sure. I think.
How many tests do you think we should write?
So 15 years ago or 20 years ago, there was talk about code coverage and getting to 100% the code coverage and performing a lot of tests. And we moved away from that by saying, what's good enough? And what are the most nasty bugs to fix and so on. So it's about finding the quality issues that matters, making sure that you have regression tests so you don't, that you don't have to find the same problems several times. And there's a lot of different tests. So hire someone with the seniority within quality to teach everyone about what is good enough. Mm. Because there's no such thing as kind of having 100% code coverage. It's no value in that. Mm. But having someone who can coach everyone to have a good feeling for tests. But running your own, and also to have to get each other to try to ruin or kind of bang, kind of trying to attack, because it's hard to test your own code because it's so pretty and you built this and you know how it should, how it's supposed to work. So have a hackathon or a bugathon where you try to break things for each other. I think that's more powerful, and you learn about your own kind of your colleagues' codes and so on. So that's I think that having a bugathon is really a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, test. I started actually writing tests when I started building, but then I found that. Do you have an opinion about, you know, front end versus back end? Do you think that because front end you can test manually and you see everything, you see when things go wrong. Do you have an opinion on like where you should test? Is it mostly back end or?
It's different. It's different tests. So front end is. You need to have other step-by-step or kind of manual tests around the front end and run. It's easier to do automated, more easy to do automated tests in the back end. But then it's also about integration tests. And if you have microservices on the back end, then you need to figure out how to do integration tests in between them and so on. So there are challenges all over the place. So I think having someone on your podcast here to talk about testing would be really interesting, because they're doing so much new modern thinking and philosophy around testing these days. But make sure to have to write down kind of what are our guidelines around what should we test before we release, and for us to find a good enough, a pragmatic approach to testing that you can agree on in the developer group, but make sure that they are held accountable for the quality of your product.
I will hold them accountable. So can you explain the different phases in DevOps methodology?
Well, I'm not sure that there are phases, but I think one, if you want to read further, I think starting with the Phoenix project, you could put that in the hands of anyone. It's a, it's almost like a thriller with DevOps as the hero. So that's a good place to start. And then read the Accelerate book. And if you don't read the full book, then you can start by reading just the first 80 pages or so. It's very easy to read. And that would give you the insights of how to check your DevOps temperature, because it describes four different key metrics around lead time, deployment frequency, and how often things break, and how quickly you can find the culprit if something breaks. And just using them can give you the hints on where you need to fix things in DevOps. And looking at lead time, kind of from you get an idea in the team until you have the feature out with the customer, how long time is that? And I often divide that time into two, kind of from idea to code change, because that first segment is often around culture and how close the product owner is to the team, and how, if you have waterfall, kind of UX, UI, front end, or back end, front end, or if you run in kind of quick iterations within the team. So it's very important to kind of track that, but it's more about organization and process within the team than a technical issue. But then when you have the code change and are ready to release, the lead time from kind of doing the code change until the client has the feature, that's very interesting, because then you you need to deploy it in a test environment maybe. And then you need to run the smoke tests or the sanity tests, and then to move it into production and deploy it there. And you need to do pull review requests with other teammates and code to check your code reviews and everything. And there you can actually add days if you don't have a solid process there, and if you don't have, because maybe that other person owning that service is busy with something else. So looking at the lead time will lead you into the different phases of what you need to address in your DevOps. And I would say, make sure that you measure lead time in minutes, not hours and not days and not weeks, but you should be able to deploy. Anyone should be able to deploy anything several times a day mm-hmm. from anywhere. And if you achieve that, then you have a good DevOps flow, I would say.
Mm. Mm, nice. Your last job, mm-hmm. so what you say, gig, or what you call it, was at G-Loot, which is a very cool company. Can you just tell us quickly what they do and also what you did there? And what challenges you had there?
I was so happy to get that assignment as interim CTO at G-Loot. Mm-hmm. I think that our slogan is your home for everyday esports. Mm-hmm. And it's a way to challenge yourself in esports like Dota or Counter-Strike or any of the other esport games and become better and have that daily mission or return to those games on a daily or weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And then you can use this to get better, and you can compare yourself to friends, and you can compete in tournaments, and you can do most of it asynchronously, because we can calculate how good you are and you are placed on different leaderboards. Mm-hmm. But then being able to actually compete with others on live tournaments that are live streamed and commented by pros, and you can actually win money as well. So my teenage...
Did you compete?
Well, not in the official ones, but we competed all the time in the office.
Mm. And did you win?
I got a few headshots, and I'm proud of that. So, and I don't think that... But everyone competes working at G-Loot. We use that as a team building thing. Mm. We're on... And the CEO, Johan Persson, he's come in second in DreamHack, in the DreamHack tournaments. Mm. Of course, he's really good. And there are some people there. And Vuko working there, he has actually been the coach and manager of the world's best game team in CSGO. So people working there are really good, but everyone is competing on their own level, and kind of, and that's a great team building activity. Mm. And I love games, and that's what kind of brought me into this, into the tech world from the first place. So it's just as king, I think, it's a playful environment where people play and pretend. I love that atmosphere and work environment. Mm. It's so easy, and I think, and no matter where I am, I always try to get that. I always join the board game club. There's always one board game club in each company.
What's your favorite board game?
So many. Settlers of Catan, maybe. That's a board game with hexagons, and you buy and sell stuff, and you build roads. And me and my lab partner, when I studied at KTH, this was 4 years ago, Java was just released, and we decided to build Settlers of Catan in Java. Java was just released, it looked terrible, the graphics package was so buggy, and we spent the whole, and we decided to build that, and we're like, how hard can it be? It was like the last assignment in a training, and you know, we spent so many hours, but I'm so proud of that, we could actually play the game. Yeah, on our computers. And
but you learn a lot if you code a game.
You learn so much and kind of having fun. And that's what I also liked about the KTH master's program. There was so much about creating games in the labs and having fun and learning things while having fun. Mm-hmm. And the side assignments that I've had or did during my career before I stopped coding some years ago, they were also kind of doing games together or doing something fun. And you learn a lot that you can take into your professional world. And when you're having fun with friends, you develop a lot and you show your vulnerabilities and you laugh together, and I love that.
Your vulnerabilities when you lose.
And your vulnerabilities when you lose, because of course someone needs to lose, and I think it's a good practice to be able to lose and get up again, and also being a good winner, and kind of the team takes care of each other. Oh, and everyone gets to drink beer, no matter if you lose or win. So on. And
it would be a horrible punishment otherwise.
Yeah, it would be a horrible punishment, and it will not create the work environment that you want to have, innovative, and where you actually have to give each other feedback and insights within the team.
Mm. So what did you do there? What were their challenges at
Geloit? So at Geloit, that was great, because they completely changed their business model, and we rewrote the whole platform. So I entered when it was 6 weeks left of the crunch of rewriting everything. Mm-hmm. So the challenge there was to finish that off, to get that release out the door, to divide the teams into cross-functional teams instead of kind of having front-end in one team and back-end in one team and UX, UI. So making sure that we create teams around some business problem or end-to-end business value, and having all the competencies in one team to be able to solve something, and to get people to get to know each other, to understand why they're there, to find the processes, and to shorten the lead time in those teams. So that's what I did there, to create those teams, to create the culture around it. And also we had we rewrote the full thing, the full platform. And of course there are a lot of bugs when you release that from start. And then creating that DevOps culture of every team actually being able to take care and test their own code and manage live incidents. Mm. So during that time, we brought the infrastructure team, and kind of we defined their role as to deliver an internal platform for the product teams to be able to develop, test, deploy, maintain, and manage live incidents, and for the product team to understand what is the testing strategy, and how do I maintain, and how do I manage live incidents. And that can be scary for developers who have never actually looked at the production graphs and who have never seen the Google Cloud environment. So we defined five, it was like a small driver's license, to just, and also being on call, that could be scary, to have kind of 24/7 watch on the production, and to be called in the middle of the night saying that, okay, the servers are down, what to do now? So we defined an onboarding process for developers to actually assume that responsibility without kind of the fear of it. So that they could have an on-call buddy to call kind of when they did that the first times, mm-hmm. and to understand and to create the documentation and where to look and what are the usual problems that usually happens, and who do you call when you can't solve the problem. Mm-hmm. And for everyone to feel relaxed in that, because it is scary to be left alone with a crash servers that have crashed and burned. So introducing cross-functional teams and introducing on-call routines for all the product teams. That was kind of my major achievement.
Mm. Mm. Oh, getting a call in the middle of the night.
Yeah. So I actually, during my first 10 years, I worked responsible for fourth tier support. We had a support organization, but me and my team was responsible for when they couldn't solve the problem, they called us. So I was the incident manager, and I had that phone, and it could call, and we had really big clients like AT&T and Lehman Brothers and international banks and so on. So we really needed to get things up and going. Mm-hmm. But that, I love that. I love the adrenaline, and I'm not scared of kind of getting my mm-hmm. hands dirty, and I knew exactly what what to do. And I knew how to troubleshoot and to find the problem. And I knew that I couldn't always fix the problem, but I could nail it down so much that I knew exactly what developer who could fix it. Mm-hmm. And that was all that was needed often. So I love the thrill, but I also know that for people who have never done it before, it's intimidating and daunting and really scary.
Mm. Yeah, that's maybe a problem we have when you have so many users from all over the world, and we luckily are not there yet, but it's a luxury problem, I would say.
Yes, it is.
Okay, this talk is coming to its end. I'm just gonna finish up with some leadership questions. So, when you come in as a leader, how do you get that respect? Because, a lot of people maybe can be suspicious. Okay, here's a new CTO first.
Sure.
And how do you get the team on your side and stuff like that?
That can be very difficult. And I think having one-on-ones with people, making sure that they understand that you're there to help, really listen to the pain points that are there, and listing them and starting to tick them off and trying to fix their biggest pain points. I think that is the first step to do. And also to tell them a bit about my technical background and what I've done, and connect them with people and bring in old colleagues to help and to relate to the problems and pain points that are in this specific organization, and be open to everything. I think that is what kind of slowly can gain the respect of developers.
You take a helping what do you say?
Yeah, I think
you give a helping hand.
Yeah, and servant leadership is a modern common phrase, but I think it really is about that, because these people in the organization, they don't have to be told what to do. They know what to do, but they are blocked by other things that they don't have the mandate to solve. So to ask them is like, okay, you need to deliver this. What can we do to make you be able to deliver it? And they say that, well, and they point at each other and they point at tech, and then it's like everything is broken. Like, okay, let's sort this out and start listing it. Mm-hmm. And having that structured approach as a leader of saying kind of what problem and what is the biggest pain? How important is that? Mm-hmm. Because when things have been bad for a longer time, they can't differ between what is most important and what should we start with. So helping them find a way to gauge what has most impact, what is the most painful thing, and then starting to address those one by one. And then slowly, and it doesn't have to take that long time before you actually see impact of that, and saying that, okay, this is a competence problem, this is a documentation problem, this is a recruitment problem, this is a kind of, and just sorting things out and starting taking them off.
Mm.
I think that is what's gaining the trust of tech organizations.
Mm. Okay, great. I think that was my final question. I had so many questions, but we're running out of time here. But it was so great to talk to you and learn so much today. And I really wish you the best for in the future.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me. It was a great conversation.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. WeTel Talks is created by WeTel, a coding community with thousands of developers. In our app, you can find your next career opportunity or join tech conversations. See you next time.